M34, number 2B.
And that's right. Then, thought is brought further to the next chapter, some objections answered, where it is shown that every idea reflects every other idea, thus constituting a consistent whole. It shows there the coherency of all ideas. Can you see now? What did we say? What Christianity is? And now Christianity, its main aspect as Christianity. We said Christianity is infinite reflection. It's idea at the point of infinite reflection. And when one reads that chapter, it's all about that coherency, that every idea coheres with every other idea, is consistent with every other idea, that no idea is isolated. That she ends that with that wonderful statement, you see, that as a drop of the ocean is one with the ocean, so is every idea one with principle. So is every ray of light one with the sun. We just have to see here that infinite reflection, that there is no idea which stands by itself. As we have seen in the functional line of reasoning, that every idea reflects every other idea. And here she shows it. She shows that that universe is a universal universe, where every idea is linked together with every other idea, where the ocean can no more be split up into drops. If we split up the ocean into drops, we have no more an ocean, because the sum of the parts, how does it read? The whole is not the sum of its parts. The whole is bigger than the sum of its parts. If we have an ocean, if we take it apart into millions and billions of drops and put these drops isolated, they never have the quality of an ocean. You can have no ship on it. You can have no fishes in it. The moment ideas are brought together into one, they are more than the sum of its part. They are much more, because through coordination, new qualities are being formed. And this is one of the big things that in all sciences today is being brought forth. I can see it in physics, I can see it in biology, I can see it in anthropology, everywhere, that they begin to realize that only that unity is really doing the right thing. Because only having the sum of its parts does do it. Only when all these parts are united in a coherent whole, she speaks here about consistency, coherency, and all that, only then does the part take on the nature of the whole. I used to say years and years ago when I did take this chapter, we have to see that we are not the drop of the ocean, but that we are oceanic. But even if we only are reflecting one aspect of the whole, we are reflecting the whole. Therefore, the drop does not only have then the quality of a drop, but of the ocean. And that's what this chapter here, some objections answered, show, that we should not object against this differentiation, put in the objection to differentiate between me and you and he and she, but to have the coherency of the whole in consciousness. Then, once we have the coherency of ideas, no more isolated ideas, then naturally we have a sense of wholeness. And only then, therefore, the chapter on practice can come in, because the chapter on practice has always to do with wholeness. Because sickness means that wholeness has been lost. And so the Christian Science practice here is summarized, the science of ideas operates as a science of healing, namely the practicability of ideas. But this practicability of ideas, of seeing everything whole, can only really be practiced if all those 11 chapters before have been seen and digested. How can we just see a situation whole if we have not seen in the chapter before that each idea links together with every other idea, so that every idea is whole, every idea is oceanic, every idea is godish. And only on that basis can we really heal somebody, because healing means seeing a situation whole. Healing does not mean to change something which is false into something which is true. Healing means seeing wholeness, seeing that everything is whole. And so that whole chapter on Christian Science practice starts right in, you know, with that very tender story of Jesus and the Magdalene, where he didn't say to the Magdalene, "You are a sinner, you are a harlot," and so on. He says, "Thy sins are forgiven thee, I see you whole." It's that point, you see, where Paul said to Onesimus, "You are free, go back with my letter to your master, and I tell the master, set you free. You are free, no matter what you have done." You know, Christian Science practice is not a practice where the patient has to tell the practitioner how bad he was and what he has done wrong and what silly thing he has been doing and how bad he has been and so on and so on. The practitioner is here to be with him and commune in his wholeness. The practitioner shouldn't be interested in what has gone on before. It doesn't amount to anything. Because wholeness is health, and health is wholeness. But wholeness means see that every idea reflects every other idea. All right, this is Christianity. Can you see, I go just quickly through it again. Christianity is all about the universe of ideas. So, the word first states the nature of ideas. Then the Christ comes and says, these ideas operate by dissolving its counterfeit, the illusion. Then when the counterfeit is dissolved, you can have only an infinite reflection. You come to some objections answered, which show that each idea reflects the other idea and combine as whole and one. And the moment you have that, we can deal and use that, those idea of wholeness in the practice. Therefore, we come to the Christian Science practice as a science of healing. Can you see the naturalness of it, the flow of it? And can you see the structure of this textbook? Can you see how unenlightening it must be to read that textbook, here a sentence, there a sentence, and here a sentence, there a sentence, having one's pet sentences? Well, at the beginning we may have it. At the beginning it's right. Something which is right at the beginning must not be decried, but it must be seen as being the beginning and not the end. And everything which is good at the beginning, if we cling too long to it, it isn't any more good. The manna of yesterday just stinks. And Moses said, "Take the manna of today." He said, "Gone, gone. Don't say because the manna yesterday was very good and it fed me wonderfully, I'm going to keep it and I keep it and keep it and keep it and eat it when I need it." He said, "No, take it every day new." And so we must see at the beginning it may be right to have one's pet sentences, and you know, so many practitioners, they just work with one sentence. Every case they heal just with one sentence. What they do, they believe in it. It's a religious belief. It isn't science. Because the infinite never repeats itself, so no case repeats itself, so no treatment which repeats itself is any good. In science. So, here, I just want to show this natural unfoldment of the way of life, of being. Now let's take the last column, science, where we have the last four chapters, teaching, recapitulation, Genesis, Apocalypse, and I have summarized that whole last column as saying principle and idea constitute the one and only being. Can you see? Now comes science. Whenever we say we come to science, we have oneness. We have being, the one being. Again, let's see the order. When we take the top horizontal, the word Christ, Christianity and science. First, the first four chapters show how to approach God so that we can commune with God. Once we have found our communion with God, then the Christ comes in and says, this Christ translates now this one God to mortals and translates error back into truth. Okay. When that is done, then all error is translated, and what is left? The universe of ideas. You come to Christianity. You come to Christianity, the universe of ideas. When we have the universe of ideas and see what is the universe of ideas, how that universe operates, how it is complete and whole, how it is the oneness of wholeness, then the last column, science, combines that all and says, after all, there was no way up to God, to approach God. There was no way of God coming down to mortals. There was no sense of asking how big is the universe. After all, there is only one being. Principle and idea constitute the one being. And we get that coexistence of God and man, that unity of God and man. It is in these chapters, really, where we get all those big statements about the oneness of being. How does she teach this oneness of being? In the chapter on teaching Christian Science, I think she shows that adherence to principle makes us to be principle's idea. A Christian Scientist. Here she speaks a lot what constitutes a Christian Scientist. See, now we are no more one who prays, a petitioner, like in the first chapters. Now we are no more a mortal that has to be transformed into an immortal. Now we are no more seeing how the ideas dissolve in our universe, a false universe. Now she shows that the very nature of man is that he's a Christian Scientist, that he is a scientist, that is man, to be a scientist. And that whole chapter shows that by having that oneness with principle, adherence to principle comes in very much, that oneness with principle, we are principle's idea. Can you see? And we are principle's idea. Principle means that principle has system and science. We become a scientist. The moment, therefore, we begin to reason everything from principle and from principle and from principle and from principle, we are principled, we are principle's idea, and we are a scientist. So the question, how can I become a Christian Scientist, is not by saying you shouldn't drink anymore, you shouldn't smoke anymore, and you must subscribe to the monitor and to the journal and so on, and then you are a Christian Scientist. Become a Christian Scientist means to go through those 12 chapters in being, in consciousness. Then one is a Christian Scientist. No matter what one's background is, no matter what one's allegiance is, no matter if I am a Jew, if I am a Catholic, if I am a Protestant, if I am a Methodist by background, no matter if I belong to a church or don't belong to a church, it's being. A Christian Scientist is that consciousness which goes out from principle and remains in principle and works for principle. That's a Christian Scientist. Just as a mathematician is not that one which belongs to a mathematical association. You can be a wonderful mathematician without belonging to any mathematical society. And so, to be a Christian Scientist is to be principled in consciousness. Then, recapitulation comes along and shows that this principle expounds itself through a system of ideas, namely through Christ science. Now, you see, the first chapter there, teaching, only again as the word introduces you to become a scientist and what makes up a Christian Scientist. Then comes recapitulation and shows the Christ of that principle and says, now I'm going to show you how that principle always interprets itself through a whole system of ideas. You know how the introduction to recapitulation is, that absolute Christian Science pervaded statement to elucidate scientific metaphysics. So what she gives there is not how to become a Christian Scientist, what makes a Christian Scientist, but shows there what this principle of a Christian Scientist is, how it interprets itself. And so recapitulation gives a whole interpretation of this principle. Starts right from the top, what is God, and goes on and on and on, step by step, and expound this big principle. And so we get the Christ science. Christ is the expression of God. Therefore, here the expression of principle. Well, the expression of principle is a system. It's a system. It's a science of ideas. And in recapitulation, she shows that. Once she has shown that and has expounded that, she goes on to Genesis and gives the Christianity sense. Principle includes within itself the forever genesis of idea, fulfilled and perfect being, divine science. What does Genesis show? You know, I think one has to get the right sense of Genesis, because it is perhaps a bit our fault, or it was our fault and still is perhaps quite a bit, that we put a lot of stress on the 7 days of creation. Well, that in itself is not a fault, but that we go to the chapter Genesis in the textbook and not in the Bible and explain the 7 days of creation as a step-by-step unfoldment of an idea, which it is in some way, but not, that's not its main concern in that chapter. Because the main concern in that chapter, that everything comes right from above, from the Infinite One, and says, I am mind. And as the I am mind, it says, let there be light. As the I am spirit, it says, let there be a firmament. So the main tone is not a Genesis sense, is not the linear sense, but the main sense there is that it shows that the divine infinite principle includes the whole genesis of idea in itself. It isn't a creative sense that Mrs. Eddy gives in her explanation. It's not that creative sense where God creates step by step something, because her interpretation is always so that she says it is an, this genesis, this creation is an emanation of an infinite self-containment. A paradox. Either you have an emanation or you have a self-containment. If something is self-contained, it cannot emanate. That's a paradox. But naturally, the highest teaching in spiritual things are always given through paradoxes. Right back to the mystics, the greatest things they always said were paradoxes. And one has to see that, because they only show in, through those paradoxes, usually two great point of views in one. Namely, that it says that what seems to us an emanation or a step-by-step creation is actually not a step-by-step creation, but it's actually a being, something which is included forever, an emanation of infinite self-containment. Well, that's how she tries to climax the sixth day of creation and then goes over to the infinite. So what she shows here, that whatever happens, that whatever evolves, to human sense evolves, is not an evolution. That whatever seems to unfold, to develop, is not a development. Whatever seems to create and come forth step by step, to human sense, is not that. Because in being, everything exists already. And that she has to explain here in that chapter on Genesis. That she really shows that principle includes within itself, the forever Genesis. Therefore it gives us a great sense of motherhood there, you see. The mother that includes the ever Genesis of its child. And therefore naturally excludes the second record of creation, excludes the possibility that error can ever create and be successful. And then finally we come to the apocalypse. I've said principle forever operates as principle's infinite possibilities. All these epitomes which I have given here seem so harmless. They say principle forever operates as principle's infinite possibilities. But when one naturally reads that whole chapter on Apocalypse, one is just overwhelmed what these possibilities are. There she shows that nothing in the whole world, in the whole experience, is outside of principle's government. There she shows that the dragon and the devil and everything, whatever happens there, the sum total of human misery, the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, they are all governed by principle. They are all in the plane of principle. They are not something outside. They are all part of the infinite principle. The human and divine is one. The subjective and objective, she shows, are divine. The great dragon and the angel, they are all one. She shows the seven vials full of the last plagues are just an angel saying, come and drink it. When you drink it, you see the Lamb's wife. You aren't being killed when you drink it. Come, and you will be saved by it. See, at that point, in a way, I think sometimes that we are very much at that point in our consciousness today, in the development of the spiritual idea. I think we have come really to apocalypse in these years. We begin to realize that nothing is ever going on but principle and its infinite ideas. And we really begin to see that no dragon is going on, that no animal magnetism is going on. Even if it seems and shows itself as animal magnetism, we'll see that it is not animal magnetism, that it is an angel. And that is all in the chapter on Apocalypse. Apocalypse always brings the whole textbook together. Whatever subject one traces through the textbook, when it comes to Apocalypse, everything is gathered together and say, don't worry, old boy, don't worry. All that there is going on is the divine principle and its infinite idea. So don't worry. Don't worry. That signs itself. If you look down again, on that vertical, always the last thing after the dash, you see, you have in Christian Science a Christian Scientist. That's Christian Science. The next one is the Christ Science. That's absolute Christian Science. Genesis gives divine science. And Apocalypse gives the highest sense of science itself. Yes. That's the structure of the textbook. Actually, it isn't, as we have seen, it isn't just a structure which we can intellectually grasp, It is a way of life. It is a step, showing step by step how our whole consciousness and living consciousness gets into line with the divine. Step by step, more and more, until finally we come to that last conclusion in the Apocalypse. Don't worry, old boy. Don't worry. There is only one principle, and that principle is infinite. And that principle has an idea, and that idea is infinite too. And besides that, there is nothing. And all what seems to be as something else isn't anything but the false concept of principle and idea. It isn't anything per se. All there is per se is the infinite principle and infinite idea. Wonderful story. Quite a wonderful story. All right. Is there any question, a direct question about this? If not, then you have nearly survived. Not quite. Yes? Beg your pardon? What is a Christian? Usually a rotten man. Makes a lot of hell. Well, I would say, sorry, Emma, I don't make laughs of it. But that's what usually a Christian is. Well, a Christian is not very much until he's a Christian scientist. And a Christian scientist is a scientist that builds his consciousness on the Christ idea. That's all, on the Christ idea. So he can be a Jew, or he can be a Mohammedan, or a Buddhist, or whatever it is, or an atheist. Usually the atheists are much nearer to being a good Christian than the so-called Christians. It is basing oneself on the Christ truth, on the Christ idea. Yes. All right. We have another few moments. Can you take that chart, which is entitled Mind Matrix? Now, I have shown the textbook as a matrix of the 4x4. And this naturally, as I have shown to you, is a very, 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 very great reduction to just a very, very fundamental aspect of it. Actually, if we call this first chapter prayer, just the word as the word, you see, and give just one epitome of it, this is, first of all, a very difficult thing to do, to boil down 17 pages just to one sentence. But you know that in each chapter, naturally, each chapter is built up, as I said, through the seven. In one way or the other, through the seven. So each chapter has a structure, mostly, that runs from mind to spirit to soul to principle, life, truth, and love. You ask perhaps, why is it usually in the word order? The reason is that they are usually in the word order, all of them. Though they may be here Christianity as Christianity, they are usually put up in the word order because the word order is the order of the seeker. The seeker makes step-by-step discoveries. It is a textbook is here to lead thought orderly from ignorance to enlightenment. That's why these chapters, practically all of them, are laid out in the word order. So, we haven't considered up to now, really, what is then the content, the more minute presentation of a chapter. And as I have said, I have done the first 8 chapters in London, and they are on tape, and so we don't want to go over them. But I would like to show you something else which is in connection with this, namely, you have felt that the synonymous terms are of great importance. That if we don't know the synonymous terms, we really are a bit at sea. And so we naturally must get a clearer sense of what mind means, spirit means, and so on. But then, when we have done that, we have seen that we must also see the operational sense of each synonymous term.